This morning, our scripture is from Psalm 71, verses 17 and 18. Since my youth, O God, you have taught me, and to this day I declare your marvelous deeds. Even when I am old and gray, do not forsake me, O God, till I declare your power to the next generation, your might to all who are to come.
Christian, the fact that you can't see anymore or remember anymore is okay. It's just part of getting older. And nobody likes getting older, right? It's part of life, but nobody likes getting older. There was a man in his mid-50s who was on a subway in New York. And because it was very crowded, there was no place for him to sit, so he had to stand. And as he was standing there on the subway, he noticed a very beautiful young woman who kept making eye contact with him. Very attractive. She was probably in her mid-20s. She kept looking at him. He started feeling pretty good. He was thinking, yeah, this old man still has it. Feeling good about himself. And then he really felt good about himself when she started to speak to him. And she said, "Sir, would you like my seat?" And then he didn't feel so good anymore. Yeah. Nobody likes getting older. Nobody likes getting older. And we try like crazy to hide the fact that we're getting older. We want to, you know, cover up the signs of our aging. We want to have a younger looking body. And so Bowflex says, you know, if you buy me and put me in your house and work out 20 minutes a day, you'll have a younger looking body. We want to have, hair with no gray in it. And so Grecian comes along and says, if you put me in your hair, it's going to take away the gray and you're going to look younger. And we don't want to have those lines and wrinkles. And so Botox says, just inject me and I'll get rid of those lines and wrinkles for you. We want to look younger. Everybody does. And in many ways, our society is obsessed with trying to look younger, or at least trying to delay the aging process, even though everybody's going through it and we all know what's going to happen. We want to somehow find that fountain of youth. But the truth is, aging just does bad stuff to our bodies. In fact, Ecclesiastes talks about this, kind of talks about what happens to a person's body as they get older. In Ecclesiastes 12:1, it says, "Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come, and the years approach when you will say, I find no pleasure in them." The days of trouble, what are the days of trouble? The days when you're old, he says. Remember your Creator in your days of youth before you get old and before you come to the point where you say, I find no pleasure in life anymore. And what are these days of trouble? What are these days of old age look like? Well, in verse 3, he says, when the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men stoop. He's now going to use some metaphors or some images of what aging looks like. It says, when the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men stoop. What is he talking about here? Well, he says, when age comes, your strength is diminished and you start to tremble. You start to shake. You can't control your body like you used to. And the strong men stoop. In other words, you start to lose your height and you start to lose your stature. You shrink and your back starts to bend as you get older. Goes on to say, he says, and when the grinders cease because they are few. What are the grinders? They're your teeth. You know, they didn't have dentists back in those days. They couldn't make dentures. So as you lost your teeth, you just lost your teeth. There was nothing to replace them with. So your grinders became few. Your teeth disappeared. He goes on, and those looking through the windows grow dim. What's this about? Well, this is Christian's problem. It's about your eyes. You can't see so well anymore as you age. And they didn't have laser surgery and they didn't have contact lenses back in the Bible days, so you just lived with cataracts and bad eyes. That's just the way it was. And he's not done. He says, when men rise up at the sound of birds. This is talking about the difficulty you have sleeping as you get older. You just don't sleep as long as you used to. You're easily awoken at night. Even just the sound of a bird can stir you from sleep as you age. But all their songs grow faint. Your hearing starts to go. You can't hear so good anymore as you age. When the almond tree blossoms, we're very familiar with almond trees around here in the Central Valley. What color is an almond tree when it blossoms? It's white. Some of you are almond trees in full blossom. That's a new way to think about it, right? I'm not gray. I'm an almond tree in full blossom. But that's what he's talking about here. When your hair turns white, it's another part of the aging process. And the grasshopper drags himself along. Now, this is quite an image. The grasshopper drags himself along. When you were young, you had a spring in your step. You're like a grasshopper bouncing along. But now that spring is gone, and so you're not a grasshopper, you're a grass dragger. Okay, you're just kind of dragging yourself around. All right, I mean, some very vivid imagery here from Ecclesiastes of what the aging process is like. And desire no longer is stirred. There's kids here, so no explanation, okay? Just, they didn't have medication for that thing back in the day. All right, but these are all issues of aging. Then man goes to his eternal home, and mourners go about the streets, and the dust returns to the ground it came from, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. These are the days of trouble that the writer was talking about back there in the first verse. It's not a good thing for your body to get older, and then it ends here. Now, isn't this a wonderful... Didn't you come to church to hear all this, to be reminded about what it's like to get older, aren't you? All right, let's have the benediction and go home. No, I mean, this is cheery stuff. You know, as you get older, the elasticity in your skin goes away and it starts to sag, and, you know, your hearing and your sight deteriorate, and, you know, all the weight moves from the two poles and it settles right in the middle, you know, the equator, I guess. It's just, you know, bad things happen to your body. And I know that everybody right here who's under the age of 25 is thinking, that'll never happen to me. And all of us over 25 are here to tell you it will. And in some kind of funny way, we can't wait for that to happen to you. Because you're going to be just like us someday. Now, our society is very much pro-youth. In many ways, we worship youth. We worship young age. We want that. We do everything we can do to try to get it back or keep as much of it as we can. And because we worship youth, we don't value old age. We see nothing good about getting older. It's just something to be avoided. But the Bible is not that way. The Bible is not pro-youth and anti-old age. The Bible is very much pro-old age. It sees a lot of good in getting older. In fact, in the Bible, old people are to be honored and they are to be respected. The word elder is used 175 times in the Old Testament, and it's a positive thing, not a bad thing, to be called an elder. Because, especially in the Old Testament, with years comes maturity and wisdom. That's something that youth don't have. They have a lot of energy, they have a lot of vitality, but they don't have wisdom and they don't have experience. And the Bible places a very high value on wisdom and maturity. It's something to strive for. It's something to desire. It's something to want. It's something to look forward to. And wisdom and maturity only come with age and experience. Proverbs 16:31 says, "Gray hair is a crown of glory. It is gained by living a godly life." So look around. Who has gray hair? These people have lived a godly life. They're not getting old. They're just, they've lived a good life. It's a different perspective. And those of you with no hair, well, I don't know what to say about you. But it's a different perspective. So in the Bible, elders in the community are to be treated with respect because they are people with wisdom and maturity. They know something about life. They're to be prized. Leviticus 19:32 says, "Stand up in the presence of the elderly and show respect for the aged." Because they know something that the young people don't. They're a voice that needs to be listened to. They deserve respect. So this morning I want to talk about this because it's not something we talk about very much. We don't want to talk about the fact that we're all getting older. We'd rather talk about how do we stay young, or how do we try to stay young looking. But I want to ask a different question. How do you age and do it well? Because everyone's going to get older. The question is, how are you going to do it? You can do it lousy or you can do it well. So how do you age well? Because the Bible does value age. So what does it take to age well? And see, and this isn't a sermon just for old people. It's really a sermon for everybody because everybody is aging. Everyone is going to be moving up in years. So how do you go about doing it well? A couple things to think of when you talk about what does it mean to age well. A couple things that it takes. First of all, it takes wholehearted faith. What is wholehearted faith? Wholehearted faith is just this subtle but overriding conviction that I can trust God with tomorrow. It's just this undercurrent that runs through your life and runs through the way you think, and you're not constantly thinking about it, but it's just there. It's the subtle conviction that I can trust God with my tomorrow. Not because tomorrow is going to be easy, not because tomorrow is going to be a bed of roses, not because everything's going to work out great tomorrow, but because God is not caught off guard by tomorrow. In fact, God is already in tomorrow. God knows what tomorrow is going to bring. And so while we don't know what tomorrow is going to bring, God does. He's not caught off guard by it. Therefore, I can trust him with my tomorrow. That no matter what tomorrow brings, it's okay because God's in charge of it. God's already there. Isaiah 46 verse 4 says it this way. It says, "I will be your God throughout your lifetime until your hair is white with age. I made you and I will care for you. I will carry you along and save you." This is wholehearted faith. That throughout your entire lifetime, God is with you and you can trust him with your tomorrow. There's a guy in the Bible by the name of Caleb. Caleb is one of 12 spies who were sent out by Moses to scout out the promised land when the Israelites were wandering, when they were in the wilderness and they were preparing to go into the promised land. Moses sent out 12 spies just to go find out, what are we going to face when we actually get there and we try to take the land? What kind of military strength do they have? What kind of resources do they have? What are we up against? So these 12 spies are commissioned to go out and see what they're up against. And so they come back to Moses and the Israelites, and they give their report about what they've found there in the promised land. There's 12 spies. So when they return, 10 of the 12 give this report. They say, "Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt?" And they said to each other, "We should choose a leader and go back to Egypt." In other words, if we try to take the promised land, we've seen what's there. There are giants there. There's no way that our people can overpower their people. And if we do, they're just going to take our wives and our children. We're going to be destroyed. Why have we come this far just to meet this as our doom? Let's go back to Egypt where it's safe. Let's find a new leader, get rid of Moses, and let's go back to Egypt where it's safe. That's what 10 of the 12 spies said. But there were two other spies by the name of Caleb and Joshua, and this was what they said. Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and says, "We should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it." Now, you have two spies, and you have 10 spies, and they saw exactly the same thing. How can they come back and give such different advice on what to do next? How is that possible? Well, they had a different amount of faith. Not in themselves, not in their military strength, but different amount of faith in what God can do. Now, Caleb was 40 years old at the time that he was a spy and he came back with this report. He's 40 years old. Now, after this experience, God sent the Israelites back into the wilderness for 40 more years because he realized they weren't ready to take the promised land. They didn't have the faith that would be necessary to go up against the challenges that they were going to face. So he sends them back into the wilderness for 40 years. And after 40 years, then they come back and they do take the promised land. And now Caleb is 80 years old when they take the promised land. And once they go into the promised land, Caleb makes the speech. He says, "I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to explore the land. And I brought him back a report according to my convictions," according to my faith, in other words. "But my brothers who went up with me made the hearts of the people melt with fear. I, however, followed the Lord my God wholeheartedly." In other words, Caleb says, "I looked at what they looked at. They came back and they made everyone afraid to go in. I looked at it and I said, let's go. Because if we follow God, it's going to be okay." So, you have two different kinds of faith. People seeing the same thing, same experience in life, but two different kinds of faith. By the way, if you're a person who at the age of 40, who has a small amount of faith and a really negative attitude about life, you should know that your chances of just making it to the age of 80 are significantly decreased simply by your attitude toward life. There's a guy by the name of Martin Seligman. He's a psychologist, and he did a study on this. He studied a religious community. He went into this religious community, and he divided the people there into four different groups. In one group, he put the people who were the most negative and had the least amount of faith, he put them in one group. Another group with the people with the most amount of faith and the best attitude, and then two other groups who were more in the middle. And then he just watched how these people lived their life and what the results were. Here's what he found. Of that group of people who had the most faith and the best attitude, 90% of them lived past the age of 90. 9 out of 10 of them lived past the age of 90. That other group that was the most negative and who had the worst attitude, only 34% of them lived to the age of 90. Your faith and your attitude have a huge impact on how you age. It's a source of tremendous amount of vitality. How you look at life really will affect how you age. And so first and foremost, as you think, I want to age and I want to do it well, it doesn't begin with your body. It begins with your attitude. It begins with your outlook. It begins with your faith. It begins with how you see things and what you do with your trust in God. First part of aging well is a vital faith. In fact, there was another study that was done that tracked over 2,000 adults who lived in the southwest part of the United States. And what they found was that people who were optimistic and faith-filled, they had better health habits, they had lower blood pressure, and they had better immune systems. And in this group, they found that the people with a positive attitude and large amount of faith had, on average, a 10-year longer lifespan. So, how many of you are glad to hear that a good attitude will add 10 years to your life? Okay, if that's not good news to you, that's not a good sign, okay? Might want to work on your faith and your attitude. 12 spies were sent out, 12 people. Two had faith, Caleb and Joshua. They came back and they said, "We can do it. We can do this." They believed that God was bigger than the Canaanites. The other 10 said, "No way, it can't be done. Let's go back to Egypt where it's safe." By the way, do you know what happened to the other 10 spies? They all died in the wilderness. Only Caleb and Joshua lived another 40 years to the age of 80 to be able to go into the promised land. The other 10, they didn't make it. So your attitude, your outlook, and your faith are huge when it comes to the issue of aging well. How do you see things? How do you interpret things? How much faith do you have in God for your tomorrow? Another thing that's a really important part of aging well is having a challenge, having some kind of a problem, a difficulty, an obstacle. You need that in order to age well. And this is really counterintuitive. Go back to Caleb for a second. Caleb has now arrived in the promised land. He's 85 years old. And if you live for 85 years old and you basically outlived all your peers, what is it time to do? It's time to retire, right? Go into the whatever the rest home was that they had for people in that day. You know, kick back. You've had a difficult life. Now hang it up and you know, spend the rest of your days taking it as easy as possible. That's what we'd think. Listen to what Caleb says. He says, "Now then, just as the Lord promised, he has kept me alive for 45 years since the time he said this to Moses, while Israel moved about in the desert. So here I am today, 85 years old. I am still as strong today as the day Moses sent me out. I'm just as vigorous to go out to battle now as I was then. Now give me this hill country that the Lord promised me that day. You yourself heard then that the Anakites were there and their cities were large and fortified. But the Lord helping me, I will drive them out just as he said." Let me ask you a question. Is it more difficult to go into battle against an enemy who you're fighting on literally a level playing field? Or an enemy who's up at the top of a mountain in a well-fortified city and you're literally fighting an uphill battle? Which is an easier battle to go into? Obviously, the level one. You know, it's extremely difficult to fight an enemy who's above you, who can rain down on you, whatever it is their artillery is, and who's in a well-fortified city. But this is exactly what Caleb asked for. He says, "Give me the toughest challenge. Let me go up against the Anakites, the one there in the hill country. I'm going to take them on at the age of 85. I still have something." And so he says, "Lord, give me that toughest assignment. Give me the biggest challenge you have." There's some research that was done at UC Berkeley on aging. And they used laboratory rats to do their research. And so they took two groups of rats. One group was given just regular food. And the other group was also given food, but some obstacles were placed between the rats and the food. In other words, if the rats wanted to eat, they had to get over things and around things and through things. They couldn't just go directly to their food. They had to encounter some challenges in order to eat. And what they found was that the rats who had to overcome obstacles and challenges in order to eat became the healthier rats. Literally, their brains were better cortex of their brain was thicker. And they were able to overcome challenges better. They were able to navigate mazes better. They were just literally healthy and stronger rats because they faced opposition that the other group of rats didn't face. There was a researcher on the study by the name of Marion Diamond, and she said this in her concluding remarks. She says, "In terms of successful aging, it is not enough to continue activities in the same groove year after year with the same expenditure of mental and physical energy. The brain requires new challenges if it is to remain a healthy, functioning organ." You want to age well? Give yourself some challenges. Don't just try to find the easiest path in life possible. You're actually better off facing challenges, difficulties, things that you have to overcome. And this is Caleb. He goes to God at the age of 85 and he says, "God, give me the biggest challenge. Give me the hill country. Give me the battle where I have to fight literally uphill." Because God has really he has wired our bodies and our minds and our spirits this way, that we do best when we're facing challenges and difficulties. It's not the easy way, but it's the best way. See, we so often associate the good life with ease and comfort and security and whatever is the path of least resistance. But that's not what we were made for. We weren't made for always finding the easy path in life. It's easy, but it's not the way we were wired. And so aging well really requires that you face challenges, that you face difficulties, not just say, what's the easiest path I can take from here to the end of my life? So we need a life-giving faith, a big faith, good attitude. We need challenges and difficulties that are bigger than us. And then in order to age well, we also need community. Aging well absolutely requires that we be connected to other people, that we have relationships, because again, we were not wired by God to live in isolation. We were wired in such a way to be in community, to be in relationships, to be connected to other people. Back to Caleb for a minute. Caleb was one of the two faithful scouts. Joshua was the other one. Now, it turned out that after Moses died, there were really two candidates for the job of who would replace Moses. It was Caleb, and there was Joshua. It turned out that Joshua was the one who was given the job. He got the big job. And it would have been really easy at that point for Caleb, who's done everything that Joshua has done, who's been as faithful as Joshua was, it'd be really easy for Caleb at that point to withdraw, to sulk, to get angry, to get mad, to get bitter, and to say, "That's not fair. I should have got that job. That's not right." But instead, he chooses to continue to engage himself, in fact, to increase his engagement with the nation of Israel by becoming a leader in their fight against the Anakites. Think about this for a minute. Caleb's generation, the one that originally left Egypt, every single person from that generation at this point is dead. In other words, none of Caleb's friends and family and associates who he began with are alive, except for Joshua. And again, it would be so easy at that point for Caleb to just pull back. "Yeah, my compatriots are gone. I have nothing to live for. Poor me." But instead, he becomes a leader, he becomes a mentor, he becomes a cheerleader for the next generation. He invests himself in them. I want to go back to that research that was done at Berkeley using the lab rats. What they found was that in order for the rats to really optimize their health, not only did they need challenges as opposed to being able to get to their food easy. But the other thing that really led to good health in these rats is if they lived together. They found that if they put 12 rats in a cage, as opposed to isolating one rat per cage, the rats that were in a cage together, a community, so to speak, they were the ones who did the best. The ones who had challenges and the ones who had community were the ones who did the best. And it just simply reinforces this concept that we were wired that way. You know, people need people. We need each other. We need to have relationships. You remember a couple years ago, the movie March of the Penguins came out. And there's one scene in that movie that's pretty poignant because it gets so cold there in the, I think it's the Antarctic where these penguins are, that literally they need each other in order to survive. If they didn't have each other, they would freeze to death. In fact, I'm going to show you that clip right now. So if we can go ahead and have the lights and turn it on.
As the father settled into their long wait at the breeding ground, the winter's second storm arrives. The temperature is now 80 degrees below zero. That's without taking into account the wind, which can blow 100 miles an hour. Though they can be aggressive during the rest of the year, at this time, the males are totally docile, a united and cooperative team. They brace against the storm by merging their 1,000 bodies into a single mass. They will take turns, each of them getting to spend some time near the center of their huddle, where it's warmer.
The point there is that in order for these penguins to survive, they can't just be on their own out there in the middle of this incredibly cold place. I mean, even these all, they were all males, by the way, no females involved. These males who are usually aggressive, in the face of extreme conditions, they all got together and said, we, for our survival, we've got to work together. We've got to be a community. And so they take turns. And, you know, some being on the outside, some being on the inside. But it's absolutely critical for their survival that they do that. Community guards our lives. We're not meant to go through life on our own. We need people around us. We need community. So, what is aging well all about? Well, first of all, I would say that aging well is about more than just your body. It's about more than just having fewer wrinkles or having bigger muscles or having less gray hair. Those are nice, but that's really not what aging well is about. Nor is aging well all about your finances. It's not just about having a big 401k or having a big nest egg so that when you get to the end of your life, you know that you're financially secure. That's nice, but there's so much more to aging well. Aging well involves having a life-giving faith, having a perspective on life that sees the positive and that sees the possibilities and that sees that God is in control of tomorrow, not just me. If I'm in control of my tomorrow, that's very scary. But if God is, somehow, no matter what comes down the pipe, it's going to be okay. And it means having challenges. Not just finding, you know, what's the easiest way to get through this? How can I have the fewest amount of obstacles possible in my life? It's easy, but it's not a great life. And then we need community. We need people because we're not meant to live in isolation. Let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for the wisdom that comes to us through your word, through the experience of people who have gone before us, and for the people who are older than us, who know a few things. Lord, help us to strive for that same wisdom so that we can apply it to our lives at whatever point we are on the aging process, so that we can live well and we can age well and we can do it in harmony with the way you've made us and the way you've intended our lives to go. I pray this in Jesus' name, amen.